afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Are you sure you are?
Yeah,
he's got his microphone up in the,
I forgot
up in the skybox there.
I forgot to get ready here.
Your neck's not that long.
Yeah.
So who's our sponsor?
Hey, yeah, we have a sponsor.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
The sponsor. You told me not to forget.
But you forgot.
No, I remember.
Okay. Our sponsor today is Pape Machinery. Pape Machinery is our local John Deere tractor dealer here in Reading and surrounding areas. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. They're also a new Honda dealer. They also carry the Honda generators for if our citizens here in California. It's mandatory.
If you'd like to make your own power since PG&E. He's not allowed to do it.
Yeah, if you live in California, you have to.
We can always wait for Gavin Newsom to fix it, though.
Yeah, he's going to.
Because he's amazing.
I have a lot of faith there.
Please sign the recall, by the way.
Yeah. So, stop by and see the folks there at Pape Machinery. They'll make a great deal on a John Deere tractor or lawn and garden equipment, riding mowers, zero-turn mowers, push mowers, you name it. They've got it. And you can reach them at 226-9226 or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
Yeah, there you go.
That's the business end of the program. We will be taking breaks to celebrate capitalism today, though. So, you know, we've got those about every 15 minutes because capitalism's a good thing. We're going to talk a little bit about that today. And also, you can find everything about the program like 10 years. I think we actually crossed the 10-year threshold. So we are at wethepeopleradio.us. We're at .net, .biz, .info, but some chucklehead has the .com and won't give it to me. They want a lot of money. I was like, yeah, okay.
Oh, one of those.
We're we the poor people, so we won't be buying the .com.
We the poor people radio.
So, you know, some wealthy benefactor wants to buy the .com and give it to us. You know, hey, we'll be we the grateful people. We kind of blow with the wind. I should stop now.
I got no pride. Yeah, let's move on.
I'm kind of tired today. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so we have a really cool guest today. I know you're thinking, good grief, this could be a waste of time. No, it's going to be awesome because we have Professor Cynthia Ayers. I think we're calling her professor. I am, anyway. I was going to call her doctor, but she got cheated out of being a doctor. She might want to tell us the story. It's an age-old story that those of us who are conservatives have all experienced in some form or fashion. But she serves as the deputy to the executive director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. Ms. Ayers is a national security threat analysis analyst and consultant. Hold on here. My microphone keeps running away. I need to bring tools next week. Every time I start talking, it goes up and I can't read what I'm reading. Okay. Let's try that again. For real. She's a national security threat analyst and consultant, having retired from the National Security Agency, that we would call the NSA, in 2011 with over 38 years of military and civil service combined. This is where it kind of gets... Well, okay, that's pretty interesting, but this is where it got interesting for me. Her intelligence community career included a position as the NSA representative to the DCI's Counterterrorism Center at CIA headquarters, where she worked throughout the attack on the USS Cole and the 9/11 crisis. Her government service culminated in an 8-year assignment as the NSA's visiting professor to the U.S. Army War College. How cool is that? We've never talked to somebody from there, so that's kind of exciting. Where she taught electives on contemporary threats to national security from an intelligence perspective, cyber warfare, terrorism, etc. I'm not really sure what etc. means after you've started with cyber warfare and terrorism. Apparently, sky's the limit, literally, as well as military applications of artificial intelligence. She advised students on research concerning strategic intelligence, counterterrorism, cyber warfare, and critical infrastructure protection. And she comes to us by way of Dr. Peter Pry that we have had on discussing EMPs and power outages in California. And if you missed those programs, one of those was last week, and it'll link you to the previous ones as well at wethepeopleradio.us. So I'll hit some other things from Professor Ayers' bio here later in the program, but We don't want to cheat her out of this. I've also posted some of her articles. Terrific. I think the first one you should read is the first one I listed, which is Atlas Almost Shrugged. And if you've never read Atlas Shrugged, well, there's still time. It's a really famous book. It's easily accessible.
Well, after you read that article, you'll go out and buy a copy and go read it.
I know.
It's
and as
scary.
As a former English teacher, my goal was to make everyone read Atlas Shrugged, and now it's finally...
And yeah,
it's, unfortunately, it's become a documentary.
It's happening.
Yeah, boo. So, Dr. Ayers, now that we've completely bungled that beginning... I know you got in late, too, so...
Not at all bungled. I love the way you guys present. This is fantastic.
Yeah, it's not like real radio where we try to be professionals and everything.
Oh, no. I shouldn't read it that way.
That's so tedious. You know anybody can do that.
Ends with a lot of chuckling.
Sound all grumpy and, you know.
Well, the left is very good at sounding grumpy.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Love you.
Aren't they, though? They are the grouchiest people on earth.
They are, yeah. I don't know to what extent a person can live with themselves with being negative.
I think it's not the vegetarian thing. I think it's the lack of meat.
Yeah.
That could be.
That's a miserable way to live.
It is.
Living in a world with no meat. Make me grumpy, too, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And no way to get your frustrations out other than bash conservatives, I guess.
And then there's that. Yeah, no guns, no meat. Yeah, what do you do for fun? I guess you bash us.
Yeah, yeah. It seems to give them a never-ending supply of something to do.
Yeah, that's true. And we hide right out in the open, so we're terrific targets.
Right.
I didn't know where you wanted to start today, but I've got to say the Atlas Shrugged article was terrific.
Oh, thank you.
And for anybody who has read that book, it just, I don't know, the longer we go, it's really weird. There's a convergence happening between the movie Idiocracy and the book Atlas Shrugged. And who would have ever thought those two things would ever come together? But in a really weird way, it's like that's kind of what the world is looking like these days.
Yeah. I actually, as the article states, I picked it up after having ignored it for quite a while, but in high school, I believe it was, and we were allowed to read little portions, or we were given portions of it, and then I bought the book eventually. Never really read the book. I had it laying around collecting dust. And then I realized that some of the things that I'd read in high school were interestingly real now. So I picked it up and started re-looking the entire thing. It was amazing because, 500 and some pages?
It's like 1,300. I'm not sure what your copy looked like.
Yeah, I know it was large.
It's ginormous. I would always encourage people, don't buy it in paperback. It makes your hands tired.
Right.
You know, holding on to it. Just get it in a big old, get like an old library book version. It just lays open for you and you can just read along.
Yeah.
But I tell you, you never forget the people. You never forget how much you hate the bad guys, how much you love the good guys. It is a true study in society, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. And just where socialism can take an entire society.
Mm-hmm.
Once it takes hold, it won't let go.
Yeah, and for those of you who have, just from little personal experience, I have a relative who doesn't really see the socialism part. Would never say that they like that, and is really very conservative, but thinks that they are on the left, kind of. Although they really don't believe anything the left thinks, but because they watch mainstream media, they don't really know how crazy it is. And so I encouraged her to read that book. And that was probably 10 years ago. And it's interesting to me how many times that has come back. And she's said, wow, you know, this kind of sounds like that book you had me read. So.
Yeah. It's pretty terrifying, actually, considering the ultimate end.
Yeah, considering the ultimate end was somewhat fictional. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is no... Oh, wait. Spoiler alert. There is no Galt's Gulch. So we're stuck here.
Yeah. Unfortunately. And really, I mean, Stuart Varney, for instance, on TV has even said, this is, quoting Reagan, the last best hope. Where do you go? If you've escaped socialism from other countries and you come here to escape it, where do you go after this?
Well, and we've heard that from all sorts of, oh my gosh, you know, Chinese dissidents. I just ran into a guy last night we've had on the program. They escaped from Iran years ago, and we had this exact same conversation. He said, you know, I came here to escape all of that, and now it's here, and they're the ones who are truly terrified because they know that there is nowhere else to go.
Well, we had a Chinese dissident just a couple of weeks ago that he's a professor, I believe.
He's a doctor. Everybody with the last name Chen is a doctor that we interview.
But his comment was
like three.
His comment was he could smell a communist a mile away or smell communism a mile away, and that's he sees it. He sees it creeping up on us here.
Yeah, so we joke, but not because it's funny. It's because we're hysterical. All right, we have to take a really quick break and celebrate a little capitalism for 2 minutes. And then we're going to come back, and we're going to let Professor Ayers do all the talking. So, you know, that we'll just move out of the way. You can start wherever you like when we come back. You're listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
I moved out to Langley recently with a plain and simple dream. Wanna infiltrate some third world place and topple their regime. Those men in black with their mansions and faces, where everything's on a need-to-know basis. Agents got that swagger, everyone's so cloak and dagger. I'm feeling nervous, but I'm really kind of wishing for an undercover mission. That's when the red alert came on the radio, and I put my earpiece on. Got my dark sunglasses on, and I had my weapon drawn. So I get my handcuffs, my cyanide pills, my classified dossier. Phones like yeah, shredding the files like yeah. I memorized all the enemy's spies. I gotta neutralize today. Yeah, it's a party in the CIA. Yeah, it's a party in the CIA.
We've been dying to play that one again.
I love that.
Only Weird Al could spin the CIA into some sort of thing like that. But I know you were the NSA representative to the Counterterrorism Center at the CIA headquarters. So you weren't. I figured, well, you weren't really CIA exactly. So we could probably still make fun of it.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I have a lot of CIA friends. They make fun of it, too.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they do. Actually, I saw some Secret Service people last night. They're not very fun, though. They all think they're very casual. They were all dressed in casual clothes, and it's like, I can totally tell what you are. And the guy's like, what?
Right.
I go, you must be the Secret Service guy. He goes, no. I go, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Because, see, when you say no, you should smile. They need, like, a special smiling, class so they could blend in more. They all look so serious.
You know, I never thought of it that way, but you're right. That's interesting.
Yeah, because you should look, you know, like, hey, how's it going, you know, and then be secretly checking them out. But instead, they're secretly checking you out, and then they talk later, which is a dead giveaway. But I don't, with all this stuff that's going on, I don't know, you want to start with, I don't know, the cyber stuff, or... Where's a good place for people who are kind of clueless about this, which would be us?
It all kind of links together. Actually.
Yes, it
and
does.
I thought maybe I could start to kind of as a follow-on to what Dr. Pry was saying last week, and then go into the cyber aspect of it, because I know he said that we might disagree. I don't think we do, actually. We actually agree to a large extent on the cyber issues, but... But clearly, and I think everybody's figured this out by now, any terrorist, criminal, near peer or peer nation state, any adversary who wants to take us on knows well that it has to take us down instantaneously and long term. It has to attack what we in the military call our strategic center of gravity. It's a Clausewitzian term, but essentially, center of gravity is, the definition is the hub of all power and movement upon which everything depends. Now, it's interesting to me. It sounds exactly like the electric grid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
And I happened upon electric grid issues when I was studying Ahmadinejad right after he was elected, right around 2005, 6, 7. I was writing papers about Iran and what Ahmadinejad's intentions were, his relationship with the Mahdi, and some of the weird statements that he was coming out with that to me indicated he had every intention of taking us on almost within the 2 years after his election, if you want to call it an election. He seemed to be discussing something like the takedown of the grid. Now, there have been various things that have happened during the period of time that he was president, which seemed to be indicative of his continued belief that the Mahdi was talking to him, the Mahdi was telling him what needed to be done, that he intended to do these awful things to us, essentially. And, interestingly, he was building coalition that looks suspiciously like the same kind of internal coalition that the Ayatollah Khomeini had initially formed, the intellectual elites, the communist socialists, anyone that he could get together that had the same enemy, which then was essentially the Shah. He gathered together, and they were able to, of course, then overthrow the ruling structure in Iran, and then of course the Ayatollah turned on everyone else, purged the whole group, and it became the Islamic Republic. The Islamic Republic, which is still at war with us, I might say, they consider themselves still at war with us. But Ahmadinejad was doing something on a worldwide basis, on a global basis, which I found interesting, if not pretty terrifying. He was putting together a coalition of North Korea, Russia, China, Venezuela, Ecuador, some of the criminal groups and the human smuggling groups that were occupying the area between Venezuela and the southern border of the United States. And it seemed that he was putting this together, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, in order to take down the United States. And there again, from the indications that I was seeing, it almost seemed like he was talking about something like an EMP. Now, why nothing happened during his period of time, perhaps we'll never know. I think there were certain times when they were close. There were certain times when they were close to hitting Israel, and something kept them from doing it. For instance, the reason that nothing was done to a larger extent against Israel was that right about the time they were preparing and almost prepared, or at least halfway to being prepared, was when the three Israeli soldiers were kidnapped, and then a war ensued, the Hezbollah, the Israeli war. Interestingly, Nasrallah later apologized for all of that. which is interesting. Nasrallah never apologizes to anybody for anything, but he was apologizing for having started this war. So, apologizing essentially to the Iranian leadership. So anyway, that was kind of a long introduction to everything, but it seems and has seemed to me for a very long time, especially since the release of the EMP report, the commission's report on EMP in 2008, that people have been preparing this type of attack against us, or they've been considering it at least to be a feasible attack, and they know full well that that is the only way that they could take us down instantaneously and long term.
Well, and just in case they needed to know if it would work well, I mean, they could look at California and
exactly.
Obviously, people were turned to jello in a matter of 2 days.
Wow.
Not real jello, though, because they didn't have any refrigeration. But
oh, right.
You know what I mean.
I do. Yeah, the societal impact is just enormous. But all along the way, especially ever since I've met Peter, I've been talking to people. We started out kind of going out and having discussions on a regular basis together. We would have a two prepared sets of remarks, but we would continuously hear the naysayers tell us, "So the United States is too big. We're too militarily strong. Nobody would ever try anything like that." And we keep hearing, if this is such a big problem, why isn't the U.S. government telling us it's a big problem?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I've had people say the exact same thing. Well, if it was a big deal, why would they be ignoring it? And I'm like, I don't know. Why can't the post office get us our mail in a couple of days?
Yeah.
Why do packages get lost? You know, why do people... It's government, for heaven's sakes.
Right.
Large and ponderous and slow, and in a good way. I mean, that keeps us from being crushed instantaneously, but it also prevents us from finding solutions in a swift fashion.
Right. And unfortunately, too, I think where government is concerned, if something is kept from the people and then forgot about, like what the impeachment issue, I think, was essentially forgotten about. In 1990... everybody was our friend. The Russians were a friend. You know, the Berlin Wall came down, '91. After the wall came down, it was almost like we just totally decided to do away with all of the worries and woes and all of the threats that we thought people had against us, or were all of the threats that we were assuming were out there against
us. Well, when times are good, you don't want to, you know, pound on all the bad things that can happen.
No.
Let's just enjoy the good
times. We
don't
want to be ready for anything.
Yeah.
That would be silly.
Exactly.
Oh, right. Right. Well, and then at about the same time, we started with something called risk management, I think. And although it's a term that predated all of this, but it's something I think that came into being in full force right around that time and has now gotten to the point where risk management is almost a way of dismissing anything that doesn't fall within a certain boundary. If worst case doesn't exist, because it's not something you're going to plan for, it's not something you're going to throw money against, because it rarely ever happens if then. And then you get to the point where you think there is no worst case because it never happens.
Well, the other thing, too, is if we stink at fixing it, I mean, let's really not draw attention to that, because then there would be all this pressure to... You know,
right?
Get a solution. We have to take another really quick break and celebrate a little capitalism. We did have a caller who phoned in to say that the book Atlas Shrugged changed their life. And
wow.
I mean, I'm not kidding. I've read it like three different times, probably once a decade. It's a huge book. The author is Ayn Rand, often incorrectly pronounced Ayn Rand, but it's A-Y-N. Last name is R-A-N-D. And you can find copies pretty much anywhere. And I really would encourage people to, I mean, read a little bit online. You'll be hooked. The characters are the most amazing of any book, movie, or anything that you've ever read. Bill's giving me the go-ahead sign. Look at you over there. He's a mute, but he can like hustle me along.
Official timekeeper.
You're the fun killer.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
sunglasses on.
I got a song for you, fun
little,
killer.
I got a little squiggly.
Turns
thing
out
in my
I
hair
had a little
too.
Little vision. I mm-hmm. I picked the correct music, so
mm-hmm. yeah.
We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People.
Funny girl, let it play.
Walking in these woods.
Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want.
Listen to me,
Little Red Riding Hood.
think that's what our adversaries hear playing when they think about us.
I love the selection of music. This is great.
Well, you're pretty fun. Peter doesn't laugh very much, so I'm always I can never tell if he's having any fun over there. Is he one of those people who laughs on the inside?
Yes, I think so. Yes.
Okay. He likes to come back on, so I'm like, okay, he doesn't hate us, but he doesn't laugh. I'm like, that's so confusing for me.
He smiles, but you can't see that over radio.
But he's laughing on the, I had a feeling he was a laughing on the inside kind of guy. So what do we do with all these people that, all these things are a huge threat, and yet, and it's been identified, we've put all this out there. What's happening with, the whole concept of cyber warfare and EMP that's all tied together? Is there secretly movement under the surface, or?
I tend to think that there probably is. I can't, even if I knew exactly what there was, I couldn't talk to it. Except there are things that are coming along, and people are becoming much more aware of the problem. I believe, maybe the efforts that Peter's been making all of these years to try to get the public to understand what the problem is have finally come to fruition, because people, not only in the general public, are understanding the problem now, but people who were denying or never heard of it in the government are now talking about it, in the military too. To backtrack a little bit, I think I was astounded when I started speaking about this kind of issue to my own students, military students. Many of them had never heard of the problem, never heard of an EMP.
Oh, really?
No, and I had, and this is a lieutenant colonel rank. That changed over the years, thankfully. Now, actually, in West Point, which is the academy, the lower level of service schools for the military, for the Army, West Point is doing a research project called Jack Voltaic, which you can find online. Jack Voltaic is not a person. It doesn't really mean anything other than it's a project name. But it's an interesting project that they have assumed to do. They want to build a framework which cities and communities can apply to address their own vulnerabilities, to find out what those might be and address some way to attack the problems that they see that are associated. Mostly their concentration is on cyber. So they started out with a one city, one sector, went into multi-sector, single city, and then and now they're focusing on a multi-sector, multi-city problem. So they're doing these exercises with the cities, with the communities, some military, some community, local government, state government personnel, and mostly focusing at the moment on cities that have to do with deployment, so that they can work out issues that might affect an efficient deployment of forces. But what they want to do in the long term is build a framework in which any city can pick up that framework and decide to do this on their own. I'm trying to get InfraGuard at the moment, and I think we've got some InfraGuard interest in doing this, to start looking at cities that they're associated with. And InfraGuard is across the United States. I don't know if you've had any interaction with that.
No.
InfraGuard is FBI public-private partnership. It's sponsored by the FBI. Anybody can join, but you have to go through a clearance of sorts. It's supposedly up to a secret-level clearance, but they do kind of a quick. I hesitate to say quick because it takes about a year sometimes.
it's a relative quickness.
That's government.
Right. Right. But you can, in some cases, you could actually just go to meetings while you've got your application in. It depends on the InfraGuard sector that you're talking to. For the most part, most of them have meetings, and they have guest speakers, and they talk about things that are going on. Many of them are like to focus on cyber issues. Some like to focus on just about anything that's a threat. This would be a very, very good exercise that InfraGuard could sponsor to do something of importance to a community to help them see where their vulnerabilities lie and how to who to look for help and how to get help in terms of either mitigating against such things or building a plan on what to do afterward, because community response after the fact is going to be very, very crucial. If we were ever really attacked heavily by a cyber or an EMP event, we would absolutely need people in the community to know what would come next and what would be needed. Now, where Peter said that he thought we disagreed, he thought that they were spending way too much money on cyber, and initially I agreed with his concept that cyber attacks really wouldn't be able to take down the country like an EMP would. I disagree with him now on that. I think he's changed his mind since then too, mainly because Russia has proven that they can take down sectors of the grid in Ukraine. They did that in 2015, again in 2016, both in December, I might add.
Oh, interesting.
Very interesting, because I think, they've made a point that they can do it, and they also made a point that they could do it at the worst possible time.
And do we know how they did that?
Yes, actually. There are different, because I can't get in, again, into the classified arena, but there's a... different malware, bits of malware that you can put into the system and you can put plugins into this malware. It's something that would allow you to get into the system, take over the system, and in the case of Ukraine in 2015, it actually allowed them to maneuver things and kind of watch what the responses were from the operators at the same time. So they were doing their battlefield assessment and intelligence surveillance while they were attacking. It was kind of a fascinating prototype of a large-scale attack.
Tells them what to do in the invent of the real thing. They know exactly how they're going to respond and how they can counter that. Yeah, that's smart.
Right. And then the next year, there was something called Crash Override, which was a malware framework. It was the first ever of its kind. Actually kind of automated the whole thing. While they didn't take down the grid for very long, a lot of people initially assumed, well, it wasn't that bad of a cyber attack because they didn't do as much damage in that respect. It was a much more potentially damaging software problem, a cyber problem. And it was called, I believe CBS, on one of their articles, called it a test run for a bigger target, which could include the U.S.
Well, that's relaxing.
Well, do you think we have safeguards in place that maybe the Ukraine didn't?
Well, that's debated. We probably do have safeguards in place, but we're also much more dependent on digitalization.
Right.
Ukraine was not anywhere near up to the digital point that we are in our evolution, if you want to call it that, of cyber systems on the grid. So they were saved from a larger, more destructive attack in both instances, whereas we may not be. And unfortunately, to a large degree, we've already come to the point where we've digitalized everything. We already really know that anything, even if it's offline, can be attacked. If it's digital, if it's computerized, it can be attacked. And each attack varies, because every time you do an attack, people think, well, I'll fix that. And then the next attack is something bigger, different. It bypasses the things that you may have done to obstruct the previous attack.
Mm-hmm.
So the interesting thing about cyber is you can't keep up with what the threat actors are doing. You can't keep the defensive nature of cyber to a point where you can keep up and keep us from being attacked.
Well, look at just, I mean, and for people who don't really understand the ins and the outs of all that, I mean, for the folks who haven't graduated to the flip phone yet and maybe you're still repelling the debit card concept.
Hey, I have a princess phone on the nightstand. Come on.
I have a princess phone next to my bed, as a matter of fact.
I just found out the other day it doesn't work anymore.
It does work. No. If you call 911, it works.
It doesn't work.
Why do you think that's there?
Try it.
Did you call 911?
It's
when
digital.
I wasn't home?
It's digital. Those are analog. They don't work.
It's herbal herb. Oh, no, wait, that was shampoo. But for folks who don't really get that, for heaven's sakes, just look at how many times they hack into our banks.
Yes.
And this is a relatively limited private industry. I mean, they're not in charge of the whole world and data for the whole world. They're just in charge of their bank. And they'd like to keep their money and your money. They'd like to hang on to your money for you. And yet,
well, cyber's,
you know, on a
huge,
fairly regular basis.
I mean, every,
you know,
day I hear stories of people that have their bank account hacked or credit cards or, you know, went to the gas station and got
and
hacked.
And they think
there.
They've got it all. You know, they're asking you for 19 versions of the same password, and then they, oh, we're sorry, we lost all your data, and somebody hacked us.
Mm-hmm, yep.
It happens all the time.
All the time, yeah. I mean, it's even gotten to the point where I hesitate to put anything online anymore, but you can't avoid it in our society.
No.
There's just no way.
No, you can't. You can't even check into a hotel without a credit card. I mean, you have to have it. So,
yeah. Yes, not operating in the... not operating in the digital world isn't really one of the choices.
No, not anymore.
You're a little hamstrung. Shoot, they don't even sell maps at gas stations anymore, so if you can't look it up on your phone, you can't get there from here. I just tried to help a friend get somewhere, and it's like, oh, you don't have MapQuest. Well, that's an interesting dilemma.
Yeah.
We don't have those dilemmas anymore so much.
There again, GPS can be spoofed.
Exactly, which is how we all wind up, you know, late to things. That's my excuse every time.
Yeah, right.
They spoofed my GPS.
My GPS got
spoofed. I'm
going to
put that on my signature line for my email.
Oh, I love that.
It used to say, you know, refer all spelling errors to the NSA, but then, you know, that got tiring, and so, you know. I think what? Bill wants to do the commercial break. Do it, Bill. Do it.
Okay.
We're taking a break.
And there's more.
No. We'll be back. Catch us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
You read that right off my face, didn't
you?
Yep,
I did.
It was amazing.
That blank look.
We'll be right back. That's you and Dr. Pry.
Yeah.
You guys roll in. They're all, it's Bad Company again. It's those guys. What'd you say your students call you, Dr. Doom?
Harbinger of Death.
Oh, yeah. Harbinger of Death. I'm sorry, Dr. Yeah. Doom was way too friendly.
That's so flattering. I'm blushing.
Oh, yeah, Harbinger of Death. Why didn't that just roll right off my tongue? But, you know, the truth is, it's funny. I had somebody call my office, and they were, you know, going on about the state of affairs, and the guy had this solution. I won't go into it, but it was, we'll just say it was nutty. We were going to basically round up all the homeless people and make them work and stuff, and it's like, oh, okay.
You don't get to do
that. It's mostly not ever happening, ever. And, you know, you might want to check into the California Bill of Rights for homeless people and, you know, all the other, I mean, they can poop on the sidewalk, so I think they're not going to be made to work. But anyway, so the guy goes, so what are you saying? I go, I'm crushing your dream. I'm just crushing your dream. Let's just get it out right now. It's just never happening. And the guy's like, are you saying it's never happening? Oh, no, I'm saying it's never happening. So you see, we're all doing it in our own small way.
Yours
are just lieutenant colonels, you know, that probably harder to crush their dreams, isn't it?
It's different.
Yeah.
It's different.
Talk about a look.
It's different.
By the time they get to the work college, they're all very, you know, A personality, type A personality.
Mm-hmm. We've weeded out all the old small fish.
Right.
The malleable fish.
Right. But several of them do definitely understand, and I've had some interesting papers that they've written along these lines. So I think, you know, we're getting back to the point. I guess what I was trying to say earlier is we knew that an EMP could happen all during the Cold War. It was all classified. So nobody other than the military and the certain portions of the government knew about it. But we've known pretty much since the Trinity test that this could happen. Now, we lost that knowledge for a good, 17 years, 19 years. But I think it's finally getting back to the point where the military acknowledges it, the intelligence community acknowledges it. We do have this problem. General Hayden, we talked to him about it at a certain point. I wasn't involved in this discussion, but I remember what he had said in a report that was done, something like, yep, it's a problem. Can't do anything about it. Let's go on to the next issue.
Oh, wow.
But I think he's even changed his mind since then. There are things, and this is where Peter comes in just fabulously. I think we can mitigate against this. We can be what Russia already is. They're hardened. China's already hardened. Iran doesn't want to be because they have this cataclysmic apocalyptic issue that they deal with. And North Korea doesn't have anything to harden.
No,
they've solved their cyber warfare threat.
Yep, just changed their light bulb.
Yeah.
Just make sure everybody's living in the dark after dark.
So is it a cost factor? Is it just an astronomical cost that they don't want to deal with?
It hasn't been a cost factor, and I don't. It was even less of a cost factor when it was identified in 2008. I think it's more. There are so many regulations that work against it that have been part of the problem. There's this the risk management issue. Nobody wants to talk about it. Public utilities hate to talk about things that might raise their customers' rates, which to me is hollow. It's a hollow argument because how many times when we first had cell phones, for instance, and you get this long, long list of fees and things that were attached to your ability to have a cell phone. Did you end up questioning any of those fees? No.
You didn't know what they were for anyway, so.
Right, yeah, it's impossible to tell. At one point in time, and I think it's not that much different, it was less than $1 per year per rate there.
Oh, wow.
Which is
okay, that's just sad.
Nothing. You can't even argue with that.
Right.
Well, I mean, when you look at it just in California, the places that are served by Pacific Gas and Electric, which isn't the entire state. I don't know if people realize that, but that is not the entire state.
Pretty much all of Northern California, which they say Northern, but that's like Central California.
But the Northern County, couple of counties are
that's true.
Are Pacific Power. Yeah. The city of Redding is the largest city north of Sacramento. We're covered by Redding Electric Utility. So PG&E has a huge customer base. But they're forced to spend $2.5 billion a year on idiotic green crap. That's my scientific assessment there.
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
but I mean, if they use that on, you know, maintenance and things that were not mandated for them to be out, you know, fishing for different form. I mean, we have tons of hydro here. We're not allowed to call that renewable. You know. Yeah, I know.
That is so bizarre.
Mm-hmm. Don't make sense of that. But we do that kind of thing, and yet money is a factor to harden the grid and deal with the cybersecurity issue.
Yeah.
So that makes it just 10 times more fake.
I tend to think, too, and I don't know all of the bits and pieces behind all of the issues, the specific laws, regulations, whatever, that go into effect in this. But I know the NERC, mm-hmm. the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, is allowed to levy fines against their utilities, the companies, if there are any problems. And I think any specific problems that range in scale from rusty connectors in the distribution system to major problems with transformers or something. But when you have fines that are hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, for infractions, you almost get to a point as a utility that you hate to identify infractions. You hate to identify almost anything that might cause a problem, because then not only do you have to pay to have it fixed, but then you've got to pay.
Because you didn't fix it sooner, and yeah.
Yeah. And then there are other types of similar issues that are involved that keep the utilities from really wanting to discuss any problem whatsoever. I've heard one is, for instance, if they have any kind of additional equipment, for instance, that they have to accept that equipment, and even if it's paid for initially, they have to then accept all kinds of regulatory issues and documentation and manpower, anything associated with that equipment forever and ever. So, I think there are different reasons for different utilities, but what really gets to me, and I know to Dr. Pry, is this the lobbying by the utilities to keep any kind of legislation. You can understand, if you look at those kinds of things, you can understand why they wouldn't want more regulation. But when it's something that really is for our national security, and all they can do is pay money into the pockets of politicians in order to keep from fixing
something that's going to actually destroy the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah, right. That seems a little counterintuitive, but we are that way sometimes.
Yeah. Of course, half of our population is accusing the other half of things that they do. And there's a large part of counter... sorry.
That's awesome. We can just, pick that scab right before the break. Just get it over with.
Yeah.
It is crazy, though. Some of the stuff, it's like, well, I have this penchant for listening to... I have kind of a rotation on my Sirius channels, on my six channels, and I'll go from the Progressive channel to the Patriot channel, because that's about as extreme as you can go, and then I swerve over to CNN, then I swerve to Fox, then I swerve to MSNBC, and now back to Fox Business, and then Progressive again, and so every time somebody hits a commercial, I go to the next one. And it's like tapping into different universes.
Oh, I can imagine.
It's the same story. Only totally different.
Radically different take on it.
Yeah, it's frightening and bizarre, actually. So we're kind of excited that we have you as our hostage for the second hour, since we've, kind of goofed off a little bit here. Everybody's like, oh, again, really? You're going to apologize and then keep doing it? Yes.
I greatly appreciate this opportunity. Thank you.
Well, these topics actually are stressful and complicated. And they're not good 5-minute deals. And I'm going to post the Jack Voltaic 2.0 on the site right now, so
if we
want to talk about that, people can go in and reference that. You can find it at wethepeopleradio.us. We will be back with our friend Professor Cynthia Ayers. And that is all. Go on and read things. You have 5 minutes to do that, because the news will just be the same old stuff, just different spin. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. Pape Machinery is our local John Deere tractor dealer. They also handle the turf products. Go up there and see what they have in stock. They've got a big inventory of tractors and mowers and all kinds of stuff. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard, or you can give them a call at 226-9226. They're also a Honda dealer now. They can fix you up with a Honda generator. Lots to choose from in stock, so go up and see them.
Christmas is coming, so what if you wanted to say, get like a fun John Deere clock?
Yeah, yeah, you could get
or a steering wheel cover.
Yeah, you could.
Or toys.
Yeah.
Or little tiny clothes for small children with John Deere logos on them.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Okay, they've got a lot of stuff in there.
They've got a lot of stuff, yeah. Yeah, go up and see them. You can also get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
I only get to go there when the alarm goes off, so I'm just loitering, waiting for the burglars to leap out of the bushes.
Don't actually let her in the building, but she can look through the windows.
Oh, it's sad. Yeah. So our guest for this show, and I have a feeling we'll have to force her to come back with us because she's got a whole bunch of information. But Professor Cynthia Ayers, I'll give you the second part of her bio. She has a really fun first part. You should listen to the first part of the show. But she was, let's see what she's doing now. Where's the little blurb? Oh, it's, stupid computers. We talked about cyber security, and I think somebody's just moving the page around just to screw with me. I'm going to blame it on the Chinese. They seem to be the ones that are doing most of that lately. Every time we do a show about them, by the way, our computers do malfunction and we have issues. Emails disappear, and that's a really neat trick when they're in your system and then they're suddenly magically not. And, oh, yes, I did check the deleted box and the archive. So anyway, Professor Ayers was employed as the vice president of EMP Act America, a bipartisan, not-for-profit group working in support of the electric grid vulnerability mitigation. More recently, she worked as a temporary part-time, that sounds like one of those fake temporary part-time, actually full-time gigs as a research assistant with George Mason University's Learning Agent Center on a grant concerning artificial intelligence-based systems. Maybe that's what's doing it. It's artificial intelligence. She is currently working as an independent cyber warfare consultant. See, that's just like something rolls right off your tongue. What do you do? Oh, I'm an independent cyber warfare consultant. People are like, what? Within the Strategic Concepts and Doctrine Division of the Center for Strategic Leadership, U.S. Army War College.
Yeah. Can I get your IP address real quick?
And a senior advisor to the executive director of the Patuxent Partnership. Is that how you say it?
Yes.
It reminded me of Groundhog Day. I got all tangled up in Punxsutawney Phil. And I was like, that's not it.
Wow. That was a great movie.
Oh, yeah. The rest of your day is going to be super fun, Bill.
Yeah.
I got up really early. I got very little sleep. It happens every time. I don't know why it makes me so silly. Other people get all tired and dreary. Not me. And I'm really good in a crisis. In a crisis, this happens, too. This is also how I handle crisis. So if the EMP hits, you just call me up. Professor Ayers, we'll have a much better time than you guys would be having.
Yes, absolutely.
If you need some comic relief, I'm your girl. what does the Army War College do? Or maybe not what they do. What is it? Why do we have it?
Essentially, it's a place where senior leaders go, lieutenant colonels and colonels, and they're are a percentage for each military service to have a certain, there's a certain number of foreign officers that come in to go through the same program. But it's a program culminating in a degree, in a master's degree in strategic studies for senior leaders, essentially. It's trying to, they go through the theory, they discuss current issues and have many different types of electives that are more focused into the types of things that they will be looking at when they leave the war college, essentially.
So are these people who have been out running the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines for a while, and then they go back and do this? Are they sent by their command? Is it something you raise your hand and volunteer for? Like, how do you wind up there? And how big is it?
It's my impression that it's kind of both. You do kind of volunteer, but they also just send you. It depends on a lot on your career progression.
If you're not very good at that, they probably don't send you. They don't ever want you to be in charge of anything. Don't give that guy any more information.
Right. Yeah. As far as how big is it, well, the Army War College isn't as big as some of the others. There's the Marine War College, which is smaller. Naval War College. I don't remember exactly what their size is, but I want to say it's smaller. The Air War College, probably similar. And then there's the National War College, and then there's NDU, the National Defense University, which is kind of similar. But ours, the Army War College, has about 350-plus students every year that are residents, and then a larger population of distance ed. The distance ed students go through 2 years of a program and come to the War College for the summer, essentially, during for the 2 years that they're enrolled, and then they graduate with a master's degree. So it's an extensive program. They're thinking deeply about the threat, about military options and issues, and theory like Clausewitz or Sunsa or well Sun Tzu, as many others like.
Sure.
I was told by a gentleman who studies nothing but Chinese information warfare that it's Sunsa. So I have a hard time trying to figure out who's going to understand.
I was going to say, but then nobody knows who you're talking about.
Right.
You're relegated to just calling it the art of war, which could mean anything.
Right. Yeah. but essentially, that's what they do. It's fascinating. I went up there with some trepidation because coming directly from NSA as a civilian, teaching at the time, I was teaching information warfare and cybercrime and cyber warfare, which kind of at some point fell out of favor, both of those. And then I started teaching intelligence applications. But it was definitely an interesting and really a good opportunity to understand more about government in general and the military specifically, and what we're up against. I thought I knew when I was, especially after being in the counterterrorism center during 9/11, but I was able to get a much more strategic outlook on what the world was facing, and it got scarier by the year. So.
Oh, well, that's relaxing. So your classes, your focus is still back to being cyber
warfare.
Mostly cyber connected.
Yes, yeah. The classes that I deal with at the War College now are mostly cyber. Yes, yeah. Now, as Dr. Price said, I mean, he was a little toward discouraging the way. Well, he was saying that much more money is given toward the cyber issue than he believed has been given toward other things like the MP issue, and I would agree with him on that. One of the things that happened along the way, you know, we were being totally ignored for quite a while, but about 2012, mid-2012, all of a sudden we started getting an awful lot of activity from the government on critical infrastructure issues, but it was all on cyber. And it was all very doom and gloom. SecDef and Department of Homeland Security, Secretary Janet Napolitano, the president himself, just about anybody who was anybody that had anything to do with, you know, NSA chief, you name it. Anybody who had anything to do with cyber issues or had in their reporting line any kind of cyber issues were starting to be they were in panic.
Right.
It was very odd to watch. It was mid 2012 through the executive order period that President Obama gave an executive order in January of 2013 and through the middle of 2013. And the explanations given varied slightly, but only slightly. And SecDef, Leon Panetta, just came out and said, if you take down our grid, if you take down our life systems, that will be an act of war. So, which was totally unheard of at the time, that,
sure,
that a cyber attack could be called an act of war.
And do you think that all of a sudden interest in 2012 was due to their lack of knowledge in that field or an increase in cyber activity?
I think they found something that had been in the systems for quite a while that shook them to the core.
Uh-huh.
And I think that was black energy from all of the open source information that I've seen. And again, this is all open source. From what I've seen, I believe they realized that Russia had implanted black energy malware into our systems. It had been there for a while, and it shook them.
Well, they gave the House of Representatives over to the Awan brothers, so...
Right.
You know,
after that,
like,
things kind of...
Yeah, Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Awan brothers, like, right there in plain sight, and, oh, yeah, nothing happened to them. We have to take a really quick break, but I would be remiss not to note that this show is airing originally on November the 10th, 2019, and November the 10th is... Is what is a special day today, Bill?
It's Veterans Day.
It's the Marine Corps birthday.
Oh boy,
you're just lucky they didn't kick in the door and come and throw you to the ground.
Still,
I'm not taking him to the birthday ball tonight. They would find out. They would know. I would be in peril. How many? Too much.
That was over the top. There,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. How many years?
Oh dear.
4.
244 years. I'm totally giving him hand signals.
Yeah, I don't get the hand signals. I'm not good
at
that.
I was trying to help you there.
Yeah,
244
sorry.
Years we have had the Marines. So, it's a good song going out to the Marines because it's fun.
Yeah.
And they're awesome.
One justice will be served and the battle will rage. This big dog will fight when you rattle his cage. And you'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. 'Cause we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly. Of the red, white, and blue. You can bet that I stand ready when the wolf growls at the door. Hey, I'm solid, hey, I'm steady, hey, I'm true down to the core. And I will always do my duty, no matter what the price. I've counted up the cost. Take a stand. When liberty's in jeopardy, I will always do what's right. I'm out here on the front lines, sleep in peace tonight. American soldier, I'm an American soldier.
Nobody says thank you for your service like Toby Keith. I don't think. Not today, anyway. So, happy Veterans Day, and thank you for all those who are serving and who have served. And the Marine Corps is how many years old today, Bill?
Oh, it's 244.
Boom.
Boom.
Yeah. Got it. We've been redeemed.
I'm trainable.
Let's get Bill over there to that Army War College. We've got some good material here, Professor Ayers.
Absolutely.
He's like a sponge. So they're there for 2 years. And they go back to their command, because I'm assuming if you're a colonel and different things like that, do you have to be do you have to have been there a certain amount of time? I mean, do you have young people? Are they old? Or guys that have been around a long time? Ladies?
And the ones that are residents are there for 1 year, but there are some, they all look young to me anymore, because when I...
You know, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that. We were just talking about that.
My son is actually older, I think, than some of them.
Yeah, that's spooky, but, huh? Yeah, the Secret Service guy last night, I'm like, how long have you been in the Secret Service? He goes, 2 years. I was like, what are you, 12?
Yeah.
So what were you going to I mean, like, what didn't make it on your career path since you just decided 2 years ago? He's like, are you going to be like a fireman or a policeman? You just decided you're going to be a Secret Service guy.
And as he shook his head, like, who is this?
He's like, oh, wait, I think the majority leader's having a problem. I got to go. All right, I was curious.
Well, yeah. I've always wondered about FBI, because when I was graduating from high school, we were trying to pick careers of certain types. And my godfather had been in the FBI under J. Edgar Hoover, but it was FBI. And I always
back when cross-dressing was really cross-dressing.
Right, exactly.
Back when we had two genders and it was called cross-dressing. Hey, we had a little confab about this over email, Bill. You weren't involved.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We already laughed about
this.
And
it was in the closet.
Privately.
Yeah.
But anyway, when I tried to see what, you know, women were finally being admitted into the FBI, but at the time, and I don't know if it's even on the internet or if there's any archives of this particular period of time at all, but according to what I had read when I graduated, a woman had to, I think it was, you had to weigh 180 pounds and, be a certain height. So it was literally they wanted women to conform to all of the specifics that men had to conform to, including weight and height and all of that.
You had to be an Amazon.
Did you have to be able to grow a beard? They're not allowed to have beards.
That, thankfully.
Guess that was out.
But I would have had to have grown about a foot and gained an awful lot of weight.
Eat three chickens a day.
Right.
So they said, hey, you shrimpy girl, you go over to the NSA and go listen to people.
Exactly, yeah.
You go tell us what's going on. How'd you wind up over there?
I joined the Army. There were so few in 1972. There were so few things that women could do back then, and I was told when I graduated from high school, I was told I could be a G. My grades were so good, and I was in the top levels of the student body. I could be a secretary or a nurse,
and president of PTA.
Yeah, something like that. So I decided to join the Army because the Army was looking for women at that point in time. It was just exactly when they were starting to bring more and more women into the Army. But still, we were not allowed to go into most of the occupational designations. So I ended up being a MORSOP. And how that worked out is it was called the Army Security Agency back then. It's now INSCOM. But I was brought into this little room and told, we got a deal for you. You're great. Your scores are perfect for the ASA. And I said, oh, what do they do? We can't tell you.
Oh, that narrows it down.
That's my kind of job there.
They're like, that's super cool. I'll just carry around this blank index card as my business card.
it was the only thing that really struck me as being perhaps something that was potentially interesting. So,
that got my interest.
And I became a Morse code operator, which then transferred into, I spent 7 years in the Army. So I went from being a WAC, a Women's Army Corps member, to being a generic member of INSCOM, and then I was able to transfer over to NSA. It took almost a year to get my clearance redone, that was really my entrance into NSA, which I will always be grateful of. It was the opportunities that I've been able to get just from having been in the military have been fabulous, especially for somebody my age. These things just weren't done back then.
Well, when did we invent the NSA?
I want to say it was 47.
No kidding?
It had an interesting evolution, too, and it started out as being the technicians, those who were crippies, mathematicians, those who did the work, essentially. And then eventually, especially by the time I left, it was more of an agency of engineers, computer scientists, who weren't incapable of doing the work. It was more that they, because those kinds of people demanded more in terms of monetary satisfaction, if you will, they ended up being pulled in and then brought up to leadership levels. And it can be debated as to how good engineers are at managing.
I've spoken to engineers before. I relate to that.
Funny how that works.
Yeah. Actually, it's interesting, too, when you get into the intelligence world, that different agencies act in different ways. And have you ever heard of a Myers-Briggs?
Oh, yes. I'm an ENTJ.
I'm an INTP.
Oh, wow. Well, there you have it.
That's right.
Everyone at home, shout it out. Feels like, what are they saying?
You know, I've forgotten even what they mean. Intuitive.
Yeah, I'm obviously the extrovert one. That'd be my E part. I rope in people like you and make you laugh on the air.
I'm a GRTGUI.
Yeah. Back well, they have forget your admission to the war college there, bud. Right. You're out.
But each one of these organizations has a different personality.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really evident when you go from one, like NSA is essentially mostly ISTJs, so we're all introverts and judging.
Yeah.
Things that are considered not necessarily for CIA work, which you have to be an extrovert, someone who will go out on
a limb. You guys are the lurkers.
Yeah.
You're always out there.
Lurkers.
You're always out there lurking. Bill, that's what you could be. You could be a lurker.
Yeah.
A lurker, yeah.
There you go. Yeah. If you were younger, you'd be a looker, but that's out.
Yeah.
Got to kind of be a girl for that.
Face for radio.
Yeah. You meet the height requirement, though. Bonus.
Yeah. Well, there are actually jokes about NSA. Why do NSA people look at the other person's shoes? How can you tell an introvert from an extrovert? I'm sorry, I ruined the joke.
Classic.
You're qualified.
Classic introvert problem.
Right. Yeah. The introvert looks at his shoes, and the extrovert looks at the other person's shoes.
Oh. And it's funny if you work for the VA. Speaking of shoe jokes, if you work for the VA, real story. Got a new underboss or whatever he is for the health administration here in Northern California. He's sitting right next to his boss. They both have their legs crossed, and they're wearing the exact same shoes. The guy, I go, so did you get the job because you wore the same shoes as the other guy? And he goes, what? I go, did you get the shoes before the job interview or after the job interview? He didn't even notice he was wearing the same shoes. He's not qualified to be in the NSA or anything else.
Nice playing.
Love to bring in the behavioral analysis people on that one.
Oh, right.
Keep them in the closet. Well, we found a good song for you. We found a good theme song for you. So we will play that now. You're listening to We the People Radio. Oh. Here's Professor Ayers in music.
Stop me now. I'm having such a good time. I'm having a ball.
Say theme song there. There's so many though. So many. So
that's a
do you still remember
wonderful selection.
Just seemed fun. So do you still remember all the Morse code and all that? Are you the person, like, I could just watch some movie and it, what was it? I saw like 10 minutes of it. Bill was watching it. There's a movie where they snuck these guys onto an airplane because they'd been taken over by terrorists.
Oh, that was executive action.
Oh. And somebody was in the cargo part of the plane, but he remembered how to do Morse code, so he signaled to the fighter bombers not to shoot him down. See, yeah. That'd be you.
That's realistic.
It could be. Actually, in a pinch, I can remember that.
See?
It would take me just a little while to get back into it, but I do. I actually collect Morse code telegraph keys. And
oh, wow.
You know, old field phones and things like that, so people think I'm a bit weird. But
I have an old adding machine.
They might come in handy in an EMP scenario. So.
If you're going to transact money, you can call me. I've got the old adding machine.
Yeah, push the button to side.
Adding machines are wonderful. Actually, I think that's a great thing to collect.
And I have several manual typewriters. I have a little problem there, too.
That's wonderful.
I typed all my term papers on a manual typewriter.
You know, I did my master's degree on manual, and I can't even imagine how I did it.
We had tough fingers then.
I
mean, because you've got to have tough fingers. Otherwise, you don't hit all the keys, and the strikes aren't right, and the old lady who's your typing instructor comes after you with a ruler, or maybe that was just at my school.
Yeah, but it's funny. You know, we had a party one time at our house, and one of the couples.
How did you segue into that?
Well, their daughter came, pulled me aside, and took me into the room and said, "What is that?" And it was an old Smith Corona manual typewriter, and she had no idea what it was. And I told her, she goes, "Nuh-uh." And I go, "Yeah, you put paper in it, you turn the little wheel."
Well, that's right. We had to go get him some paper, huh?
Oh, yeah. And they played with it. Completely unknown to that generation.
Well,
this is amazing.
And you know, in a cyber meltdown, of course, our secret code will be cursive writing.
Oh yeah, nobody can read that.
Only all of us old people will know that.
I was amazed. I know a 25-year-old who cannot read cursive writing.
Yeah,
I know it. That's amazing.
I know a young man under the age of 25. I taught him how to use a zip tie. I'm not sure which is more frightening. They don't know cursive writing or have never used a zip tie. I guess it depends on your career choices, huh?
Yeah. I guess so, yeah.
back to our first song about the CIA, huh?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
I don't know what it is about you, but you make us goof off. This never happens.
Oh.
Oh, okay. That was a lie. My nose is keeping the microphone away from my mouth.
I guess I could go back to cyber if you'd like me to.
Please do.
Okay. let me think. I went through 2012. Now, one of the other things that happened in 2012, they actually came out with a final report that during 2012, 41% of the cyber attacks that they had identified were against the energy sector. And actually stated, now there were no details, so I really don't know what the details were about this, but they stated that a power station was crippled for weeks due to a cyber attack. So 2012 was a very eye-opening scenario, an eye-opening year for our leadership. But since then, of course, we've had so many other types of cyber things that have happened, ransomware being one. There are several things that I think could show up even worse than they already are in the near future. And it worries me that these are really, to a certain extent, they can be used, and they probably will be used as distractions for something bigger and better. And I think that's where Dr. Kly comes in with the scenario of a hybrid attack. You're distracted by a cyber attack that's not as bad as it could be. It wouldn't take down the grid for weeks at a time, perhaps. But it could portend something that we're not looking for at the time because we're too distracted, which could be an EMP. Now, the way that you would distract people to that extent, ransomware has already been, it's already been demonstrated that they can use ransomware. One actor can use it in multiple locations, multiple sectors, and it can be used as a long-term kind of distractor. It will take you down longer term than you would normally expect from something like a DDoS attack, which is a distributed denial of service. That's where you just get bombarded with things, with emails or whatever they might bombard your system with to keep you from getting anywhere, doing anything in particular. But usually hackers can only keep that up for a day or, you know, maybe a little more, a week at the most. It, ransomware can really do a lot of damage. And if, although they've said 4% of those who attack different sectors of the community with ransomware, only 4% don't actually give the data back when you've paid them. It could also be used as a way to just store your data and hide behind the fact that it's a ransomware attack. So you're not actually looking so much for the perpetrator in order to attack them back. You're just trying to save your data. And if you do enough of that, if you do it across the country, for instance, in different sectors across the country, you could be in a lot of trouble really fast.
And who do you think is the, I don't know if you can say, but who's the big player on the cyber attacks? Please don't say Russia. But who?
Ukraine.
They really don't state who the biggest player is, but it is Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. They're really showing up as the biggest players. Of course, there are criminal elements involved there, but you never really know if the criminal elements are state-sponsored. And to a large extent, you can almost assume it.
Right.
There are also other actors. Actually, ransomware is a business. There are different players all along the line of the, that part of the business, which gets from development all the way to the attack. But and each of them gain money from it. So it's a good business to be in if you're just looking for money. It's very profitable. Yeah.
Yeah, I was reading an article the other day where the new thing that we're going to start seeing a lot of is they've actually got some AI software that can mimic your voice, and they take that and combine it with your speech pattern, and they call you on the phone, and it sounds just like the other person, and they get money that way. So it's getting to where it's going to be very difficult to protect yourself. They're pretty crafty.
And it almost is now. A gentleman that talked to us about ransomware at InfraGuard just a few months ago told us, and I quote here, all are compromised. We are going to be playing by rules yet to be written.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, this is existential.
Wow.
Now, businesses are literally just giving up. They get hit by ransomware. They can't afford it. They can't afford the days that they're down. They can't afford to pay it. So they just fail. They just pull up.
Well, I guess in Europe it's really bad. They actually pay a ton of ransom over there compared to what we're being hit with. But how can you protect yourself? Because, I mean, it just changes almost daily.
Yeah.
So it's almost impossible.
Well, they've got all sorts of stuff. I mean, think about it. Last week, so somebody called Bill at work on your cell phone, right?
Yeah, cell phone.
Said that he owed money, but they would settle it for $1,000. But if they were going to file with the county and take out a lien, and it was going to be $5,000 if they did that. And they had left a phone number, an 866 phone number, that he called back. And actually didn't get anybody, but then
I called back a second time and got the same person.
And got them. Well, he came home and told me about this, and I was like, we don't owe anybody anything, and if it was from a million years ago and somehow you forgot about it, it's not going to be $1,000. It's going to be like a zillion dollars, right? So I looked at the phone number. I just did a basic search. I just parked the phone number in there. Oh my gosh, it was the after hours phone number for a utility company in Georgia.
Wow.
How random is that? And it was their real phone number. I mean,
it was their real phone number that wouldn't.
These people were using it and intercepting
during
calls
the day
during the
when,
day.
Yeah, when it wasn't active, you know, because it was only active after hours, but they were using it during the day. So, yeah.
I mean, so it doesn't have to be your computer, really.
That's right. And I've seen similar things. I've seen a company in California being used by scammers in Maine that were, that actually the only way I know about this was a friend of mine naively took the scammers for their word and ended up losing everything. $80,000 in savings. And then because of what they claimed that they could try to get it all back, gave him a checking account with checks attached, and said, "This is the money that we've been able to collect for you. Use these checks." And he did, and of course they were bad, which got him in trouble with the law.
It's
unbelievable what they can do. They can ruin your life in a matter of days, if not minutes. It's just I wake up each day thankful that I haven't fallen for a scam yet, but it's not.
Yeah. I mean, your email comes in and it looks legit and people click on things, and, you know, you don't have to be, you know, really unsophisticated. They've got some pretty, I mean, let's face it, they were using a real phone number for a real place somehow on the off hours and intercepting those phone calls.
Yeah.
You should call your friends at, you know, where. And tell them to check with, what is it, Fairfax, Georgia, I think it was?
Yeah.
The utility company.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a secret, secret cache of money in there. So I thought, you know, so I was thinking about superheroes while we were talking about this. So anyway, I found a fun song for that. We'll be right back with our guest, Professor Cynthia Ayers, and you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Secrets I will keep. Took for granted all the times I never let you down. You stumbled in and bumped your head. If not for me, then you'd be dead. I picked you up, put you back on solid ground. If I go crazy, then will you still call me Superman? If I'm alive and well, will you be there? I'm holding my hand. I'll keep you by my side with my superhuman.
Comes through again. Three cheers for the Marine Corps.
Absolutely.
244 years. Yes. Okay. So in the final in the final 10 minutes, what would you like to add?
Well, there are a couple things, I guess.
It's not the final 10 minutes. Don't buy that. You're like, no, it's not the final 10 minutes. We're going to totally do this again on another day.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. So go ahead and do whatever you want for 10 minutes.
Wonderful.
No,
well, one of the other ways that we could be disrupted or distracted by a cyber attack is Internet of Things. I don't know if you've... Have you ever heard of Internet of Things?
No.
I have, but what does it mean? Why do I know that?
It's kind of an inclusive term for the things that are connected in your home.
Oh.
Like television, smart refrigerators, smart...
Crazy Alexa thing that some people have? What the heck?
Right.
That, I can't even explain that, why you would have that in your house, but okay.
I agree.
Anyway.
I agree. But just about anything in your home that's connected or could be connected digitally is kind of called the Internet of Things. Now, you're already, to a certain extent, probably connected because you've got a smart meter. At least most of these public utilities...
No, we do not.
You don't? Oh, good for you.
No, it's on our gas meter, which doesn't do anything because we live 2 miles from the sun, so everything we use is electric because we have to have air conditioning.
Well, this is in certain areas. As a matter of fact, Montana was one. They were putting these things on, and they would literally charge you a fortune if you did not want to be connected, and they'd make life miserable for you if you didn't. I had a smart meter put on a house that I owned in Carlisle that was put on there without me even knowing about it. So for the most part, most places anymore have these smart meters attached. And that's it can be an open back door to the grid, so that they could attack the grid through these smart meters, or they could attack the people in the house, in the home, in the building, wherever it is that these things are located. If you could get in through that, you could literally watch what people are doing on their TV set, even if it's not on. You can tell who's in the house, what they're doing, where they're at in the house, and to a large extent, through pattern analysis, when they leave, what their lifestyle is like, so that you can decide what you want to do in that particular house. If you're an attacker, for instance, burglarize the home, or perhaps kidnap somebody.
Be a lurker.
Mm-hmm. Be a lurker, mm-hmm. Or even it could be used for leadership assassinations if an attacker really wanted to.
Sure.
So that itself is a cyber scenario that's pretty terrifying. If you carry that to the strategic realm, in which an attacker, a nation state attacker, might, for instance, be looking to take out a leadership sector of the country. Harder to do, but it's possible.
And a lot of people. Okay, so I can hear them out there. I always have multiple channels. I think it's because of that stupid Sirius assortment I gave you earlier. But I always hear people in the background, back of my head, on conversations like this, who say, "Well, I don't care what they see. I'm not doing anything bad."
Oh yeah, but yeah. They can use you to get to somebody else too.
Right, but I mean, it's just creepy. Like people have I have multiple pet peeves, but one of them is TV in the bedroom. That freaks me out. It's like, okay, the only way it'll go in the bedroom is if it lives in a cabinet with a door.
Yeah, right, right.
But that's not help me out. It's not crazy, is it?
No, absolutely not. As a matter of fact, I have things stuck over the camera on my laptop, even as we speak.
Me too. I have an NRA sticker, actually. I thought that was fitting.
Oh, that is fitting. I like that. I'll have to find my NRA sticker and do that.
I should turn it around the other way, but then the sticky part would be facing me, and that kind of defeats the purpose.
I tried it on mine, but it covered the whole screen.
Oh, hey, speaking of things that covered the whole screen and didn't have a thing over your laptop, your old laptop, remember?
Yeah.
We were sitting in our office at home,
yeah.
And all of a sudden it emailed Bill a picture of the inside of our office.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, huh.
Oh,
I'm sure they weren't spying on him. Oh, wait, how'd they get the picture? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were.
Yeah. Well, even these cases of baby monitors.
True.
Becoming active and people spying on babies. It might be just playing from the local teenage hacker down the road, but heaven only knows these days. You don't know.
Well, we read a deal here not too long ago that these Roomba vacuum cleaners have, they can actually hack into that because you can actually set those from your cell phone, and they can get a map of your house through your vacuum cleaner.
Well, it does map your house.
Agree.
So,
yeah. Wow.
It does make a map of your house.
Yeah.
So I'm doing it right now. Oops.
Yeah. Oops.
Too much information.
Wow.
But
of course, these days, you can hack into your car. You can hack into just about anything.
Oh, that's true.
And one of the problems that Vice President Cheney had was that that was about the time when they decided that, oh, gee, your heart monitor could be hacked into. Anything that's really attached as a medical device that's digital,
that's right.
can be hacked into.
Yeah, that's kind of creepy. Same too with the inside surveillance. I get that. I don't know why people want to see the inside of their house when they're gone. I guess if there's somebody in there and you can't get home in time to get them out, really.
Right.
But the rest of the time, what's the high likelihood that they're spying on you?
I wondered that too, but it seems to me there are so many reasons, so many things that happen to people that you just would not fathom years ago, that we all should be careful. But then again, if you're in any kind of leadership position, if you are, even if you don't have Secret Service agents around you all the time, I think...
Like you have people who smile everywhere?
Yeah. but your basic congressman and even maybe the state, local leadership need to be worried about
things. Oh, yeah.
If an enemy knows your whereabouts and knows your pattern of your pattern of existence, so to speak, then you're in trouble. There was a general many, many years ago, and his name escapes me at the moment, but he was kidnapped in Italy and held for ransom by the Red Army, I believe it was, the Baader-Meinhof gang, or an offshoot of the Baader-Meinhof gang. But they only knew how to capture him by watching his patterns. He went out and jogged every day along a certain path, and his wife was home alone at that particular point in time. So that's the kind of pattern analysis that they've been doing for a very, very long time. It's so easy now. You don't even have to be in the area. You can just hack
in. Yeah, there's cameras everywhere. I mean, any place there's a camera, I mean, it can be hacked.
Yeah.
It is something I think people should be smarter about. Like, I always have a phone case that has a cover on the front, you know, so that it's not sitting on my desk or wherever with the whole thing just open spying on me.
Right.
He's probably listening to me, so. Actually, I'm pretty fun in just sound, but, you know, the video makes it a lot more exciting. So I'm depriving him of that just for meanness.
You could get it to the point where you just give up, and because there's so many different ways that they're going to gain access to you one way or another, you just throw up your hands.
Be like the 20-year-olds and post all the food you've eaten every minute of every day the entire time you've been alive?
Yeah.
Some of the stuff people post, it's like, wow. You know?
Yeah.
You should have a private thought every now and then.
Exactly.
It's not a bad thing.
Or at least an interesting thought.
Then there's that.
Yeah. There you go.
That's where our judger comes out. Yeah, I'm big on that. Mm-hmm. You read it and you're like, really? Yeah, we did get a piece of mail about the climate thing being the most urgent thing, but they spelled urgent E-R-G-E-A-N-T. I was like, Ergen? What?
Ergen.
Yeah. I know something that's more urgent.
Learn to spell.
Man, that's awesome. In the last 3 minutes, we found a way to throw the environmentalists under the bus. Boom! It's a perfect show.
Unfortunately, we've been through that. The National Security Agency, the intelligence community in general, and the military, there for a while, that was considered our number one national security threat, was the climate.
Idiotic climate. Yeah, let's pick the one thing we can't do anything about.
Right.
And let's not work on EMPs. That's too hard. And or not a threat. Okay, so, well, we'll chat on email about when you can come back and be our hostage again, because we certainly have enjoyed it.
Oh, well, thank you.
And you obviously bring out the best in us.
Oh, that's good to know. Thank you. I can't imagine how you could get any better. You guys are wonderful.
Well, we very much enjoyed it. Thanks a million.
Thanks a bunch for coming on.
Thank you. You all have a good evening.
You too. We can. You can find the archive of this show at wethepeopleradio.us. You're listening to KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.